Welcome to the weekend edition of the Price of Business Show. I'm your host, Kevin Price, talking to you about you and your business. On today's program, we got a lot to cover, as always, and looking forward to introducing you to today's guests. But in addition to that, I do want to mention that the Price of Business, which is one of the longest-running business shows in the country, continues 24/7 at priceofbusiness.com. We are adding new content all the time. There you can see all of our regular guests. We have reoccurring guests from Fox Business, from Yahoo Finance, gentlemen like Cody Willard, who was a longtime CNBC and Fox Business anchor. He's on this program every single week. And so we're excited by the talent that we bring you. Also, I do want to mention I've got a book called Making New Rich Books Work for You, and exclusively for our listeners of this program. It's available at a ridiculously low price. If you want to get more information about that, go to priceofbusiness.com. If you read anything by people like Tim Ferriss or Robert Kiyosaki, who's been on my show many, many times, and you know, really were excited but had little to show for it when you try to pursue those things, my book explains why. There's something going on, and the problem really isn't with these authors. It's usually with the reader. And you can get more information about that at priceofbusiness.com. With that, here's our first guest right here on The Price of Business. Welcome back to the nationally syndicated Price of Business show. I'm your host, Kevin Price, talking to you about you and your business. Always love having you on the program, Brian Gordon, longtime regular on the program, a personal favorite, a show favorite. He's someone you'll find a lot at priceofbusiness.com, which is our website and really the best place to get connected with all of our experts, what's new in our media, you name it. Make sure you check it out, priceofbusiness.com. We like to say it's a show that never ends, and the reason why is it continues there. Brian, glad to have you back on the show. What you've done and what you do is phenomenal, and someone who had spent years in the insurance industry myself, there's in the health and life side, which includes long-term care, man, there are certain areas that just require huge amounts of expertise, and I'd say one of them is long-term care. You don't want just anyone doing this on their own, unless you want them to get higher rates, higher premium rates, or not get coverage at all. Because it's you know, these apps are like a bad game show. Oh, you lose, you get no long term care, and a lot of it just has to do with not lying, but rather answering the question the wrong way. A lot of it is just wording. And so this is so important. And this topic today is so timely. We're going to talk about what long-term care insurance does not cover so people can know. And I think it's imperative. It covers a lot, but certainly enough to make sure you get it. But you also need to know, how are you going to cover what it does not have? But before you get into that, what is your best website for more information?
So our best website is bestltcplan.com. That's bestltcplan.com is the best way to reach us.
Yeah, and people should. So, Brian Gordon, go ahead with this. Let's jump right into this topic. What does it not cover?
So, I mean, a lot of people anticipate that when they go in for a knee replacement, hip replacement, short-term, back surgeries, things like that, that people are going to recover from. A lot of people think that their long-term care policies are going to cover that type of an event. That's one area that people a lot of times have misconceptions on. While there are policies that were written pre-January of 1997 and so a few after that would go ahead and cover the short-term issues that people have, but most of the time we're not seeing it. We're actually going through with my dad right now. He has one of those really old plans, and his policy will cover the short-term problems. And most of the ones today will not do that. And that's something that a lot of people are very misled when they see that. And then the other side of it is a lot of people do choose to purchase a 90-day or 100-day elimination period where they cover a certain amount of days out of pocket before the insurance kicks in. And a lot of them scratch their head. They're like, well, we thought it covers, some people will scratch their head and say, oh, we thought it covered right away for these problems. And when they bought the policies, whether it's someone that bought it through us or someone that bought it elsewhere. And we just want to make sure people, you know, like you said earlier, is making sure they know exactly what they have and how the policy functions for themselves.
Yeah. And there's all other types of limitations that you can have built into the policy in order to save money, right?
Right.
Well, which may not save money depending on how things work out. But
right.
That's the intention behind it. That's risk management. That is insurance.
Right. And that's just the client's choice. A lot of times when they buy the insurance, and these little longer elimination periods sounds great until they're in the throes of the problem, and then it doesn't sound so good for them when it's going on. And you know, the other side of what we see people don't understand either is that there are certain types of policies out there today that will cover anybody to come in and take care of us. Those are called cash indemnity policies, and I can hire my kids, I can hire my neighbor, I can hire one of your kids or your family members to take care of me, and they'll pay anyone. But a lot of the older plans, and even the policies today, there are a lot of policies that are reimbursement, so you got to hire someone through a licensed agency. And what we always suggest, Kevin, we've talked about this before, is that if someone thinks they need to go on to claim or they've got a problem, reach out to us, and we would review the policy and review the situation and let them, you know, give them a good idea of, yes, this is a legitimate claim, or you're going to have some troubles, but here's what has to happen in order for you to get the benefits paid to you.
Yeah, this again is why you should have an expert. There's a lot of online platforms that can get you long-term care, and often, again, you'll get higher rated or you won't get it because you don't know how to answer the question. And meanwhile, an equally bad mistake is filing a claim without talking to someone like Brian Gordon. I mean, that's just a huge mistake because it's asking for the claim not to go through properly. I saw it when I was in the industry. You need expertise to do it. It's just a matter of clarity and knowing the guardrails that you're operating under. And unless you're selling insurance, and I sold insurance, but I didn't fully understand the guardrails in that specific area because I sold a plethora of insurance. And so I always depended on experts like Brian. So I think that's imperative. I like the fundamental question, though, because even the fundamental question of what does LTC insurance cover, long-term care insurance cover, the knee-jerk answer is long-term care, right? But the reality is there's nuance there, and there's specific things that have to go into effect even to have the benefits of the insurance. And it's imperative for people to understand all of this and what it looks like.
Right. And we see people who are super intelligent, they're professionals. We see people that have all different, skill sets. And some of them go in and open up a claim, or they look at the policies and they think it says one thing, but it really means another thing, and they're not reading it fully. There are a couple other things we like people to be careful of. We don't have time to go into some of those also, but it's just, we have really good success. Really, the most important thing that you can say is make sure when you think you have a claim, don't wait till the last minute, and to have someone knowledgeable help you review it so you understand how to open the claim and how to have success with the policies.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So what are some things you see where people assume long-term care does this and now long-term care insurance does that, and then they're disappointed, and maybe even taken aback when they find out what the actual situation is?
Right. So it's a lot of times it's our consulting clients that we end up going through this with because they weren't explained the policies from us from the beginning. And the one thing is with the benefit triggers, as we talked about, there's six benefit triggers. And the one that always comes back is that when they open up the claim is, oh, my mom or my dad or my sister or my brother, whomever it might be, my spouse, they need help. They can't stand anymore and cook and clean and drive themselves to the doctors and do things like that. While feeding is one of the triggers on the policy, cooking it and preparing it's not. So if I could prepare a meal for my wife and she can get it from the plate to her mouth, she would qualify for benefits. She would not qualify for benefits. Right. We're going through with my dad right now, where he's going to be fine. He had a knee replacement, but because he had a stroke years ago, he only has one, as he'll tell you, one good leg to stand on. And the good leg is the one that had the knee replacement. So dad can't go home because he can't walk like everybody else does. And so he's in a rehab facility. He needed 3 nights in the hospital, so he met Medicare. And so he's in rehab right now. But we also know that he needs help with everything except feeding right now. You know, I mean, he can go to the washroom himself, things like that, but he needs help supervising him to get to the washroom at the moment. So it's all the intricacies of the policy that people really need to go in with their eyes wide open, and then you'll have, you know, things will be very successful, and you won't be disappointed.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and so ask lots of questions. That's part of it. And really, I mean, this is so crucial. I don't want to sound like I'm being grunt, because, again, I was in the industry. I could have made more money if I sold such policies without the help of someone like Brian, right? Because I'd get the whole commission if I did it. And I would not do that. I just would not do that. I had a specific person I worked with. We split the commissions because it was worth it. And I got more, right, because you know how it works. I caught him and he cleaned it, I guess you could say. But boy, that's an old sales expression. But, yeah, I had no problem splitting it because I want the client ultimately to be really happy with that choice. And my level of knowledge would not have produced that result. Final thoughts as we wrap this up, Brian Gordon, and, again, your best website.
I think it's just with anything in life, and obviously in my space with long-term care, it's like a kind of happens towards the end of people's lives, but make sure you understand what you have, get your policy reviews, understand what your benefit triggers are, and people won't be disappointed when they do need to use these policies. And just make sure your family, again, knows what you have and knows what your wishes are so that they can execute the plan you wanted them to. And, just to make sure that you have a good plan in place. Best website would be bestltcplan.com. Again, that's bestltcplan.com.
Make sure you check that out. Appreciate you, Brian Gordon. Great as always. I'm Kevin Price. This is the nationally syndicated Price of Business Show. Stay tuned for more. Welcome back to the nationally syndicated Price of Business Show. Alexander Paikin, he's a regular on the show, a personal favorite, and a listener favorite as well. A lot of questions come his direction, particularly since he is like becoming the man, the person when it comes to AI and the law. And this is very much new territory, and you are forging on in very interesting ways, Alexander. His website is Paikin, P-A-Y-K-I-N, law.net. And tell us a little bit about your firm, and then go ahead and introduce your topic today, and welcome.
Sure. Thank you, Kevin. So my firm, as many of your listeners may already know, is a commercial and real estate litigation and complex transactions firm. The firm also does other things, from immigration law to landlord-tenant representation, primarily landlord. But I personally mostly dabble in commercial and real estate litigation and complex transactions. So based here in New York, serve New York City, Long Island, and a little bit further north. And the topic for today is going to be the idea of AI replacing law firms as a whole.
Yeah, that may be something attorneys are worried about, but I'm sure that we are many, many, many years away from that ever being a possibility, and you'll explain why.
Well, it's tough to say that we're that many years away. The real real question becomes which law firms. So much like in any field, right, law firms have different degrees of specialty, of how complex the matters are, of how much human nuance and strategy will be. Remember how I mentioned in our last show, actually, that law firms might end up having a $10,000 an hour billable rate. Well, that may be true, but that may only be for 0.1 of an hour once every 3 months, because you need that lawyer to set everything up and make the system go. And from there, the system can do the rest. And technologically speaking, we're not far at all. We're not years and years. We're months and months. Depending on whether you're an optimist like Elon Musk or one of the more conservative voices on AI, you're either there by the end of the year or you're there by the end of the decade. And that's not far. So realistically, it's regulation that's not going to catch up.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Regulations are so behind so many different areas, and more so every day, right? Because things are changing every single day. I'm assuming with your hypothesis that some law firms are going to more quickly move to AI-driven to levels we've never imagined, quicker than other types of law firms. Is that true?
Absolutely.
And I mean by practice, by what they practice, type of law.
Right. So there are some perfect examples of fields where automated law can already take care of everything. So perfect case study for anyone who wants to look outside the U.S. is a firm called Garfield AI in the United Kingdom. Now, that is the first fully AI-powered, quote, law firm. It's hard to call them a law firm because, again, it's an IT company with an AI engine and presumably some lawyers who configured the documents that this thing generates. But this thing is approved by the UK Solicitors Regulation Authority. So it's government. It's got the government's blessing over there. And it offers really, really low-cost, simple services. For instance, a debt collection letter costs £2. Now, in U.S. terms, that's, what, $3 to $4. Now, imagine if you're a small commercial practice, you're a dental office, you're a whatever, and you've got people who owe you a couple of $100 here and there. Maybe there's 50 of them. But are you going to hire lawyers to send out 50 demand letters? That seems extremely expensive, and the juice isn't going to be worth the squeeze, as one of my associates likes to say. So at $4 a piece, would you have AI generate these things and send them out to you on law firm letterhead from an AI-driven law firm?
Not only cost per letter, but also opportunity costs, right? Because if you're dealing with a lawyer, a real human being, it's going to take longer than using an AI approach, obviously.
Even for a
client.
Right. Yeah. The speed at which AI can spit out these letters and the fact that it's not just an AI like ChatGPT that's going to be friendly and prepare a demand letter for you, but it won't necessarily be a good one. This thing is an actual registered and approved law firm as far as the solicitors, the title of solicitors is concerned. So this is a thing that's going out from a law firm. The document is presumably drafted and generated in such a way that it meets that standard of quality, because the UK has very high standards of quality for lawyers, no worse than any U.S. state, I would say. And if you think about it, for $3 or $4, you're getting a law firm demand letter that could be generated instantly. You just drag and drop the unpaid invoices, answer the AI's couple of questions, and off it goes, sending 20, 30, 2,000 letters on your behalf.
Mm-hmm.
All at a crazy volume rate. I can't compete with that. Not if I have humans do it.
Yeah. What are some low-hanging fruit then? So a demand letter is very low-hanging fruit. What are some other low-hanging fruit when you look at the landscape?
Uncontested divorces, I would say, and to go outside of law for a second, simple tax filings. I can't imagine that the AI couldn't make a very clear picture of most of our financials and properly report them. Within other types of law, real estate transactions, trusts and estates more so than anything, because estate planning, wills, trust creation, this is all generating text and clauses to fit somebody's exact needs. So much of that could be automated. A lot of landlord-tenant stuff could be automated. It's all very strict, structural, procedural. We have a giant gap in the U.S. as far as access to justice goes. As far as when it comes to simpler matters, from landlord-tenant stuff to basic civil problems faced by lower-income Americans, 86% get no or extremely little legal help from some kind of a clinic at the court and can't afford a lawyer. Now, those kinds of cases, millions of them around the country go unrepresented, and even middle-income Americans struggle to afford a traditional law firm. You know, a lot of people hear my hourly rate and they go, yikes. Well, yeah, but that's because they're hiring a human lawyer who handles complex things to do things that AI can do really cheaply. And if we could only offer them an AI lawyer, that same representation could be generated based on their questions and answers at a much lower rate. Now, the problem in the U.S. is you're gonna run into something called unauthorized practice of law, UPL, as lawyers refer to it. It is unlawful for a non-lawyer to practice law and give legal advice, et cetera, et cetera. So, and U.S. states do not allow law firms to be owned or operated by non-lawyers. So this is where the U.S. is going to have to figure out where AI fits in here. And it's going to be a matter of changing the regulatory barriers to redefine what unauthorized practice of law is and what using a tool is. It's the equivalent of authorizing Microsoft Word because it does the typing and I don't have to hire a calligrapher to write out my briefs.
Right.
So it'll be a while.
Yeah. So in addition to all this, it's going to be obviously attorneys resisting this. Just like here we have in Texas, really around the country, rural areas that are in desperate need of doctors that don't want to move there, and yet these same doctors lobby against nurse practitioners having parity. That's a big problem here in Texas. Every state's different. In Texas, they have to work directly under a doctor. It's very convoluted. Yeah, they could do most of the things that are being done in these areas, regardless how illogical it is. You know, you'd think common sense would say if a city has a population below X amount, we will allow nurse practitioners to operate with autonomy. Seems like a pretty simple problem, but they don't even want to concede that. So a lot of lawyers are really going to be resistant to this, I would think.
Yes, but for the wrong reasons. Sadly, most lawyers who are going to be resistant to it are going to be resistant because they don't understand how this is a tool that's going to help them rather than hurt them. Think about the days of the horse and buggy. When the car came out, the cabbies at the time, the guys who ran the horse and buggies, very much objected to the idea. But you know what? Think about how many more taxi cab drivers we then had, how many more jobs were created, and how the smart ones among those guys probably went and bought their cars, you know, bought themselves cars, put a taxi sign on it, and the taxi industry in the U.S. was booming. And because the cars could go faster and further, people traveled more. So the transportation industry grew and everybody made more money. So you can either stick your head in the sand and say, oh my God, this is going to take away my job because the way I used to do it will go away. Or you can say, wow, I have an opportunity to embrace technology to do a better job, to accomplish more than I could before because now I get to use my brains to actually come up with legal strategies, ideas, you know, brainstorm with other lawyers instead of spending all of my time typing and looking up things.
Totally agree with that. Unfortunately, fear often trumps logic, right? And medical doctors, they're pretty smart. Yet they are leading the charge here in Texas, and I know it's happening in other states, to make it very difficult for nurses to be able to actually practice in areas that doctors don't want to practice. Makes zero sense. And as a result, rural hospitals are closing left and right. And yes, we know about funding, you know, particularly federal funding being an issue. But one of the biggest ones that are not talked about is exactly what we're talking about. But you're way ahead of the curve. I mean, that's so obvious. And you're both benefiting from it now, and you already have a game plan for how you're going to benefit later. And frankly, people should be asking their potential attorney whether or not they're taking your approach, which makes perfect sense for both you and them, or are they dealing with essentially ostriches, you know, who are in a state of terror. As we get closer to wrapping up, final thoughts to both clients, potential clients, and to attorneys who are grappling with this, which I am assuming is in large numbers.
Well, I would say right now AI adoption is starting to really become a hyped-up massive thing at the big law firms. So the most elite law firms, the ones that charge obscene hourly rates and have access to and have the, you know, the most highly paying large corporate clients, they're embracing AI. They're getting custom systems built. They're getting the point. Much as always, you know, the big lumbering companies actually are pretty good at being resilient and figuring out that they need to have invest in the future, have a futures committee that thinks about these sorts of things, because they've got competitors to keep up with. The bottom of the market really needs very automated AI-powered things, and that's where lawyers who currently don't see the value in AI have to understand they can charge much smaller amounts. Maybe not the £2 the way it is in the UK, because we do have to have attorney oversight on these letters and whatnot, but if you speak to a practice, a business of some sort that has regular small collections matters that they don't bother to pursue because it's too expensive to hire you for your demand letters, well, consider employing AI and charging $20 a demand letter. And now you can get those people who don't currently have access to the legal system or opt out of it because it's too expensive, you can get them as clients and make more money. Mm-hmm. And you know, everybody wins. So try it out and use it with caution.
Yeah, that's really how the free market operates, and people seem to have a difficult time with that. A lot of people, particularly I look at developing countries, the reason why they're still developing countries is they operate under a view of win or loser. You can't have both win. And frankly, that was the secret behind U.S. Success for generations, and I'm not romanticizing. There's plenty of people who now have a very static view of wealth these days, and they're part of the problem. There's got to be a taker. There's got to be a winner. You can't have both parties. But what you're talking about is the fundamental truth, in my opinion, both parties can win, and that's fundamental. Alexander Pakin, PakinLaw.net, and you have a final thought for us as we wrap it up?
Well, I think my final thought would be, remember, a rising tide lifts all boats, unless they're tied down.
When you said that, not only was I reminded of John F. Kennedy, who talked about tax cuts, a rising tide that lifts all boats, but I also thought of Forrest Gump. And in the movie Forrest Gump, there's a scene in that movie where Lieutenant Dan owns a boat, and a giant storm was coming, and almost everyone except for Lieutenant Dan and Forrest Gump they docked their boats. But Lieutenant Dan and Forrest Gump said, hey, this is going to be a great opportunity. Just because of the water activity and lack of competition, they get a bunch of shrimp. And not only did they get a bunch of shrimp, but all those docked boats that were up on ground got devastated by the storm, and they had a virtual monopoly, and the reality is that, if you're avoiding AI because of fear, you're going to be a lot like those boats that got docked rather than being out there where the action is. So very good, springboard there for me.
Well, it really is true, if you embrace the future, if you embrace what's happening, you will succeed in this world. You have to just look around and figure out what makes sense. And if you figured it out once and started making money on it, that's great. But if you then stop looking around for 20 or 30 years, you're going to miss out that the world changed. And
you're right.
That tide's not going to lift you if you tied yourself down to 1998.
You're right. Good words to end on. PakinLaw.net, Alexander Pakin. I'm Kevin Price. This is the nationally syndicated Price of Business show. Stay tuned for more. That's our bits. Welcome back to the nationally syndicated Price of Business show. I'm your host, Kevin Price, talking to you about you and your business. And we love to say the Price of Business is a show that never ends. It continues 24/7 at priceofbusiness.com, where we're always adding new articles, videos, audio, you name it, and more. Make sure you check it out while there. Sign up for our newsletter, free newsletter, Read and Sped, the best of the Price of Business digital network for the week. And one of the people you'll find there often is my guest this segment, Joseph Muse. We call him the Muse of Business. And the reason why, he is brilliant when it comes to problem solving. And he's not academic per se, although he's certainly smart, but it's roll up your sleeves and let's get things done, which is exactly what I think we need in this economy. What he does is that he provides, you know, people on the surface go, oh, he has a consulting firm. Oh, well, there's no doubt about it. You will be consulted. You will be advised. But he's not being paid a penny unless you implement the changes he recommends and they have the results that they're supposed to have. So he ain't making money unless you're making money or saving money. And that is unheard of in industry out there today, which is why I'm kind of an apostle, I like to think, an advocate, an evangelist for your good work, Joseph Muse. Glad to have you back on the program. Fill in the gaps real quickly if anything I missed. And give that website, businessgpsllc.com, and welcome back.
But always good to be on. I appreciate it. And yes, we are a consultant, but it's a very different, I think, experience for people where we really focus on the immediate and long-term results. It's really a results business, not a consulting business for our clients. And my gosh, we've been doing it now for 14 years and I've lost count, Kevin, but I think it's north of 4,500 or 5,000 businesses that we've touched and helped over the years.
Yeah, you got to love that. What a story. All right, let's talk a little bit about this topic. You know, one of the reasons why we began this series again is because people have been coming out of woodwork with questions that are right up your alley. And so glad to have you doing the series with us. How does your performance-based fee, this is, again, the unique difference here, how does your performance-based fee structure influence your team's approach compared to traditional consulting arrangements? Boy, I love that.
It's a great question, and I think it's everything. I think it's everything in terms of what we do and how we deal with the client. And by that, I mean, first of all, the people that I have on my team, they've been with me, I think, for an average of about 8 years right now, and they're all people who want to see other people succeed. I get benefit and joy out of seeing John or Steve or Susie's business be successful. I'm not even talking about the financial compensation. It's the kind of people that we are, and my business attracts those people to join Business GPS because they want to help others and they want to fight for others. So our compensation attracts that. And that desire to treat John or Susie's business like their own. So then now I have a team that has the right mindset to it. And then because our compensation is based on performance and somebody being successful, my gosh, if we get an email in on a Saturday night or Sunday day and the business owner says, hey, I'm in a tough situation, here's my story, I'll reach out to them immediately. Tell me what's going on. Tell me how we can help. And we all take the mindset of treating it like it's our business. So when I give advice, I'm not giving advice, hey, you're going to pay me more. Hey, have you paid me before I give my advice? You're behind on your bill. That never comes up. In fact, I never talk to any of my clients about the bill, ever. All I care about is your success and take the whole financial aspect out of it. So I can go on and on, Kevin. It's a great question. It leads to incredible responsiveness from my team. It creates, I think, emotional connection to the business from my team. And then that translates into what? greater effort, better results.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, I don't want the listener to get confused. It doesn't mean he doesn't get paid. What that means, it's built into the system, and he knows it depends entirely on Business UPS's performance to make it happen. And, of course, compliance on the part of the business owner. And to me, this is huge. You like to use the gym analogy a lot. I like it, too. You know, people, I think, often buy a gym membership to say they're doing something for their health, right? Well, paying for a gym membership, you know, it's almost like a tax for failing to take care of their health if they don't actually utilize it. That's kind of what consulting's like. If all they're doing is paying someone to consult them, but they can pat themselves on the back for taking action in light of the fact they're about to go out of business. Your model is completely different, and I don't think many are going to work with you without expecting to show up. And that's exactly what your clients, and really every consulting client, has to do, is show up themselves. Your business model is structured that way, and that is huge.
Yeah, and you make an excellent point. The business owner must be ready for our approach, because otherwise it's not going to work. I feel like I write, with every assessment of the business, I write a good plan. Like, step 1 through 10, if we execute this plan, this business is going to make it. But it's dependent upon the business owner being ready and willing to take those steps. And because we are on a contingency fee, we're only going to get paid if you're successful, Kevin, it leads to very direct conversation from day one. Hey, we need to do this. We need to do this immediately. This is why we need to do this. And if you can't do this, then we're not going to be successful together, which means your business is not going to be successful. So please do this, right? It leads to a very direct, honest conversation. And sometimes a week down the road, the business owner goes, I'm just not ready for it. Okay, no problem. Then we'll disengage and we'll go help some other people. It's no problem. But you've got to be ready for that directness and that honesty about the situation that you're in and how we're going to work out of it. And that's truly from the fee structure that we have. Without that, we might have a nice conversation and I might be helping you and I might have good intentions like other consultants out there. Hey, I have great intentions. But that extra push and that extra level of honesty and frankness is what makes a difference.
Right. And, you know, something you've conveyed is that you have a level of interest with your clients that only a co-owner would have. You bring all the benefits of co-ownership, because like owners, you're not making money unless the business is successful. It's literally connected that way. And so you can have a level of candor that is in proportion to your level of showing up, if you will. You have that ownership, a sense, without any of the tax, without any of the luggage, right? I control this, I control that, you got to pay me X amount of money, you know, all of those things that come with partners that anyone who's ever had a business partner, which unfortunately I've had them before, you know, they are, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Yes, this is the Business UPS LLC difference, I think.
Yeah, and imagine we've been doing it for 14 years, so obviously we have a good recipe, and it really is, to come back around to my first point, it's really in our DNA. We are fighters for the small guy, even the medium-sized guy, but we're fighters for the people who are in distress. And so that's our mentality. It's pervasive in Business GPS. Everybody you talk to, no matter who it is on our team, that's what they're going to give you. They're going to immediately have a vested emotional interest in the outcome of your business. They've got years of experience helping thousands of other companies. If we can just get the business owner to follow our prescription, our steps, then we're going to be successful together. And then that gets back to, we need to have some victories out of the gate where the business owner goes, oh, wow, man, these people do know what they're talking about. Okay, great. Tell me. I can already feel a difference. I can already feel the weight off my shoulder. Okay, tell me the next steps. And then that momentum is rolling down the hill, and it's only going to get stronger.
Yeah, I love that. And that's a good point to add on. People, you know, the differences are so huge or vast. And the reason why your model is not ubiquitous is because I don't think most consultants have the courage to put their money where their mouth is, like you guys do. And so it's a phenomenal model. Joseph Muse, businessgpsllc.com. Thank you as always. I'm Kevin Price. You're listening to the nationally syndicated Price of Business. Stay tuned for more after this. Welcome back to the nationally syndicated Price of Business show. I'm your host, Kevin Price, talking to you about you and your business. I am always delighted. And I do want to mention before I introduce my guest, who is one of my favorites. I'm a fan of her. I do want to mention the Price of Business show is a show that never ends. And what we mean by that is it continues 24/7 at priceofbusiness.com, where we are always adding new audio, video, articles, and more. Make sure you check it out. Wendy, love having you on the program. Wendy Bork, she's a show favorite, a personal favorite, a really heroic story, and a transformation leader, in my opinion. And glad to have you back on the program. Talk real quickly about your organization, your group, Hearts of Wisdom, and the best website. It's heartsofwisdom.com. A little bit about it real quick.
Hi, Kevin. Thank you. I'm really excited to be here. And my website is actually heartsofwellness.com.
So Wellness,
that's
thank you.
The platform. Yeah.
I'm going to go get the other website. I like that one, too. But, yes, it's heartsofwellness.com. Go right ahead.
Yes. And basically, I help women with MS go from confusion and survival mode to clarity, empowerment, and a more vibrant everyday life, because that's what it's all about.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's really the essence of our topic today, from endurance to empowerment and reaching to the summit of strength. You know, I've really come to believe I have my own religious beliefs, but I also have philosophy beliefs. And I play with a lot of different schools, Buddhism. Of course, you know how much I love Stoicism. You know, and it's interesting, one thing that's in all of these, including Christianity, something that I'm sure a lot of my audience gravitates towards, is that difficulties are by design intended to make us stronger. That's why they exist.
Yeah.
And people hate difficulties. And I think our current culture, more so than ever, and they're offended and they take them personal. But the reality is they are a part of life, not just because of entropy, you know, things going awry, but by design, whatever your beliefs are. By design,
yeah.
Because otherwise we're ruined, right? We're ruined mm-hmm. if things aren't difficult. And so
right.
you recognize that. Your health challenges are, you know, on the high end of difficulty, and you have parlayed them into being a champion for both yourself and for others.
Well, and I appreciate that. And it came from going from, why is this happening to me, and feeling sorry for myself, even though I didn't want to be labeled as anything. You know, especially weak, disabled, any of those terms. And I think just embracing what we are dealing with is one of the steps. And that is really difficult because of the whole, why is this happening to me? We have to flip that around into, why is this happening for me? What is the lesson here? Because there's lessons in everything, just like you said, you know, based in Christianity, philosophy, all the things, Stoicism, Buddhism. And it's up to us to step into that. And it's hard. It's not fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And specifically, you've had multiple sclerosis. First of all, you got it at a very young age, and you've had it now for decades. And yet you pour it on, and you pour it out with a lot of strength and energy, high quality of life. And all of that is by design, not by accident. By you, your design.
And I think my hero is my grandma. She was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis in her early 30s. You know, this is, excuse me, back in the 50s when doctors ignored women. They didn't help them. And here's my grandma in her 30s, three little kids to deal with, and no answers. And I think that's really what has helped me expand my platform so much, because I am the voice for people like her who feel stuck And all she did was sit in a chair all day and look out her window because her doctors didn't have any answers. And I took it upon myself to dive into all these things that cause chronic conditions.
Yes. And, you know, there's all kinds of things going on. Our food, the way we try to process food, all the things we do, it's all about shortcuts, convenience, cheap, flavor. All of those things are as you know, really a curse on us. You know, and American food producers, they love to boast. You know, the one company, I can't remember which one, was boasting how, you know, it's hard to maintain high quality when you're feeding a billion people. And I'm like, well, maybe you ought to reduce the number of people, because not only are they often making junk in that process, but there's still opportunities for countries around the world to become self-sustaining around food. You know, Americans love to talk about foreign countries dumping their cheap goods on us. That's exactly how the rest of the world looks at American food.
Oh, that's exactly the truth, because there's no nutrition in a lot of it, and it's addictive. You know, the sugars, the chemicals, the everything that they're trying to feed us. When we get back to just whole food and eating real food, that makes a huge difference in our body. And that's actually one of the pillars that I dive into with people, is just focus on real food and then see how you feel. If you don't like it, you can go back to your junk food.
Yeah, you won't like that either because of how you'll feel. But yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. It's
all about life sentence. Yeah, so talk about this, from endurance to empowerment. And I love this. You know, kind of give us a panoramic overview. And we want people to see the article, which is on the Price of Business Digital Network. We'll have a link to it at priceofbusiness.com. But go ahead and jump into this.
Yeah, I think too often we question ourselves constantly. We doubt ourselves. We doubt our self-worth. And I think it's all about finding our inner strength and our inner courage to feel like we're aligned, feel like we are worthy, and that we matter. And I think the media helps us feel like we don't matter, that we're just another number, that we are just insignificant. But when we decide that we do matter and that our message matters, whatever we're taking out, and it's all about sharing. And I actually had, you know, some journal prompts for at the end that people can take and try to help themselves with feeling empowered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And talk about what, you know, because people hear that word, and it's a great word. I even wrote a book called Empowerment to the People. It's about economics. So I like that word. But talk about the typical paradigm that you have seen so often that people are operating under, and what empowerment looks like.
What I think most people are operating under is they want assistance, but they don't want to do the work. They want somebody to drag them along, to hold their hand, but we can't operate like that. We have to decide for ourselves that we want to change. And when we make that decision, that's when the doors open up. That's when the things do start happening for us, that we can feel like we are in charge, that we're empowered, that we can stand up for ourselves. And whether that's, you know, at a doctor appointment, whether that's dealing with a stranger, you know, asking you why you're walking like that. It's all about stepping into our strengths.
Yeah, absolutely. And it really, something you allude to often is the concept of ownership versus victimhood.
Right. Yes, because when we are in victimhood, we aren't helping ourselves get better. And the whole purpose of dealing with a challenge is to get to the other side of it. It's not to stay there. It's to move through it. Just like you said at the beginning, we are all given things to deal with. And then our challenge is to get through it, to figure it out. So that's why having mentors or reading books or watching healthy shows or podcasts or listening to podcasts, you know, are all empowering to you to get to this other side of where you want to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we often think this person has no problems, that person has no problems, they're rich, they're whatever. And the reality is they often have bigger problems because they've got a lot more to take care of. They've got a lot more liability. They've got big crosshairs on their back as easy targets for being sued because of how much largesse they have. You know, what we find is that everyone, from the poorest to the richest, have problems. What we're actually saying when we think someone else has got it better, we're just saying we like our problems. We like to have instead some problems that are different than ours.
That's exactly. The
idea of problems going away, that's fantasy. That's pure fantasy.
Yeah, and it comes back to stop judging ourselves, stop judging other people, because you don't know what people are dealing with. You know, just because I put on a little makeup, people think I'm fine. And that goes for everything. We just look at someone, and in a split second, we decide, well, they're fine. There's nothing wrong. And I think we do that to ourselves as well, way, way too much.
Yeah. In that same vein, there's a great book, and I hate the title. It's by Mark Munson, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a F.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who I really respect. So you would enjoy this book, and he was right. It's phenomenal. He says really what life is about is not getting rid of problems. It's about upgrading problems. In other words, getting rid of let's trade the fact that I don't have any transportation to getting a bicycle. Okay? Now, a bicycle has all kinds of problems compared to other forms of transportation, but it's an upgrade from always having to walk. Or getting a bus pass, or you understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
That is a phenomenal way of looking at it. And eyes wide open, and not being romantic and thinking I'm eliminating problems. You're literally trading problems.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Is my life getting better because of the trade? Certainly, but don't treat it as more than a trading of problems.
Right, and that's exactly what we should be doing: is trading something to upgrade ourselves, because we're supposed to be at a much higher level than a lot of us are living at. You know, we're supposed to be feeling a lot better about ourselves than we do. You know, we are our own best friend. It's, we shouldn't see ourselves as our enemy or be mad at ourselves or be mad at the illness or whatever we're dealing with in the moment. That just creates more problems.
And it seems like that's really our choices, right? We're either our own best friends or our own worst enemy. We're usually not neutral. We're either all in or all out. And the more all in you are, the better. That doesn't mean being romantic. It doesn't mean, pretending you don't have problems. Certainly doesn't mean you pretend you're wonderful and awesome and everyone around you is a mess. We see a lot of that as well. It entails ownership, but the idea that we're worth the ownership, and we're worth the effort. Final thoughts as we begin to wrap it up.
I just believe that feeling into our own self-advocacy and resilience, that takes some time, and it's all about our choices we make on a daily basis to begin healing whatever we're dealing with, having the courage, having the clarity, and finding those pieces to put together, whether it's books or podcasts or having a mentor, because our greatest power is not in avoiding struggle, but in allowing it to transform us. I deeply believe that.
Yeah, everyone has them. The moment one realizes that everyone has problems, they can begin to get a healthy perspective of their own. Otherwise, you're going through life like Eeyore from Winnie the Pooh.
Yes.
And go look on YouTube at Eeyore on Winnie the Pooh. You don't want to be that poor soul. I promise you don't want to be that guy. Love having you on. Love my time with you. Always appreciate it. And give your website one more time. And also, just real quickly, a summary of what you do, how you help people, which is amazing, your work.
Well, thank you. Yes, my website is heartsofwellness.com. And if you'd like a free MS guide, you can actually download that at heartsofwellness.com/you, which is Y-O-U. And I love helping women see their potential, see their strengths, and go from where they're at to living a more vibrant life every day with the simple route, the simple steps of clarity and confidence.
Yeah, no question about it. And it's obvious that you love it. And that energy alone is conveyed when you work with people. And so appreciate you so much. Thank you so much, Wendy Bork.
Thank you.
I'm Kevin Price. You are listening to the nationally syndicated Price of Business Show. Stay tuned for more after this.
If you've ever struggled to lose weight and keep it off, you're not alone. In fact, decades of research have revealed that weight control is far more complex than the familiar eat less, move more advice. Everything from our genes to the food we eat can influence a hidden thermostat deep in the brain, in the hypothalamus. That regulates our weight like a stubborn set point. When I was in medical school, one of my endocrinology professors explained that if someone gains excessive weight, the brain may reset to believe that weight is the new normal. Later on, when an individual attempts to shed pounds, the brain perceives the loss as a threat, almost as if the person is sick, and it lowers the metabolic rate in an effort to restore the older, higher weight. Fast forward to today, and mounting evidence confirms this theory. Think about contestants from the reality shows like The Biggest Loser. Many lost tremendous amounts of weight only to regain it later. Their brains, in essence, were fighting to preserve what they believed was normal. That explains why many people hit frustrating plateaus despite cutting calories and exercising more. Of course, obesity isn't just about appearance. It carries profound health risks. Excess weight is linked to arthritis, type 2 diabetes, heart disease, and even certain cancers. But here's the good news. You're not powerless. Science shows that your choices can override genetic tendencies and even reset some of the body's most stubborn patterns. Lifestyle medicine, a field in which fewer than 1% of U.S. physicians are board certified, offers practical, research-based strategies to help prevent, treat, and in some cases, even reverse chronic disease. Beyond the basics of diet and exercise, it emphasizes a holistic approach. Sleep matters. Poor sleep disrupts hunger hormones. Ghrelin, the hormone that stimulates appetite, surges when you're sleep deprived, making you feel hungry even when you don't need food. Stress matters. Chronic stress elevates cortisol, which promotes fat storage and contributes to hormonal imbalances. Food quality matters. A whole food, plant-predominant diet supports hormonal balance, improves gut health, and helps reset the brain's metabolic thermostat. One powerful but often overlooked tool is caloric density, the number of calories per pound of food. So compare iceberg lettuce, about 64 calories per pound, to olive oil, about 4,000 calories per pound. You're unlikely to eat a pound of either, but the contrast illustrates how dramatically calorie density varies. By filling your plate with low-density foods like vegetables, beans, and fruits, and adding small amounts of higher-density items, you can feel satisfied while keeping your overall calorie intake in check. For example, a salad of lettuce, strawberries, and a few raisins can be drizzled with a slight amount of olive oil and balsamic vinegar. This will deliver flavor, fiber, and nutrients, and still the meal will be relatively low in caloric density. The bottom line, weight loss is not simply a matter of willpower. It's about understanding your body's inner thermostat and working with it, not against it. With the right strategies, better sleep, stress control, and wise food choices, you can redefine your normal, improve your health, and reclaim your vitality. Remember, define your vision, then act with precision.
That wraps up another Price of Business. I am glad to be with you. Really enjoyed it and enjoying our new home here on these stations around the country. I do want to remind you that the show continues 24/7. Not only do we have this weekly show that you can hear on this station, but we're on other stations around the country with a daily program as well. You can easily learn about them by visiting us at priceofbusiness.com. We affectionately say it is the show that never ends, and what we mean by that is that it continues 24/7 with the addition of new audio, video, articles, and more at priceofbusiness.com. While there, we'd like you to engage with us on social media. Follow us on Facebook and, like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Kevin Price Live. and all of our sister sites as well. All right, I'm going to take a break until next time. Next week we'll be back with you with much more information for you, and look forward to that conversation. And I want to say again thank you to USA Business Radio to make it possible for this to have been commercial-free, an entire hour of commercial-free. And guess what? Even more commercial-free than public radio. So we're excited about that. Enjoy the rest of your day right here on this station.